Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing absolute return funds for all kinds of investors. Details at putnam.com. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Sometime in the next week or so, the insurance giant AIG is going to report its quarterly results. Notice I said results, not profits, because there aren't going to be any of those. After $150 billion in bailouts, the company could need even more help. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Microsoft, providing people-ready enterprise solutions, software based on how people really work, and by Palm Wonderful, 100% pomegranate juice in the curvy bottle, the antioxidant superpower. Information at pomwonderful.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Great to have you here on this Tuesday. It is the 24th of February today, and we will begin with AIG because, well, just because. Because taxpayers are already on the hook for $150 billion worth of loans and guarantees. Because early word is that quarterly losses, that is, for just 3 months, could top $60 billion. And because at some point, you just have to ask, where'd all the money go? From Washington, Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
How could any company lose $60 billion in just 3 months?
I guess I would describe them as, you know, a luxury ocean liner that's riddled with holes. And there are so many places where they're taking in water. Cumulatively, the losses could just be enormous.
Don Vickery is a forensic accountant and co-founder of Gradient Analytics. He believes when it's all over, AIG could lose $250 billion in this crisis.
To be honest, though, I don't expect them to report the full extent of losses because the consequences of doing so are pretty dire.
You may know AIG as a car or life insurer, but it got into trouble selling credit default swaps on bundles of subprime mortgages. These are like insurance policies for banks, so if folks stop paying their loans, AIG had to pay the bank. But that's not all AIG insured.
Mezzanine debt with corporate loans in Europe, residential loans held by European banks.
Vickery says as the global economy gets worse, more of these loans are defaulting, and AIG's losses continue to mount.
If the news that we've heard is true, it's very bad.
The new deal would reportedly let AIG conserve more of its cash and stave off a collapse, at least for now. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
There was a huge rally on Wall Street today. I guess traders have finally gotten over that case of the stimulus package blues they had last week. You know, economic forecasting and explanation is a tricky beast at best. And as we have said before many, many times, the stock market only tells you part of the story. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
The stock market is sort of like the guy who has an opinion on everything. Or maybe, says Bruce McCain of Key Private Bank, it's the boy who cried wolf.
Absolutely. It's the difference, I think, between the rational side of human behavior and the emotive side of human behavior. As one economist noted, the market has forecast 11 of the last 8 recessions.
Get it? 11 of the last 8 recessions? Now, McCain isn't saying we should dismiss the stock market. Just take it for what it is. A reliable gauge of public sentiment, often about 4 to 6 months in front of the rest of the economy.
When the public is worried and when that's reflected in stock markets that are sagging, it's probably quite likely that they're also going to be reluctant to spend on consumer spending or on business spending.
Economist Peter Morici at the University of Maryland spends a lot of time predicting what the economy will do. Every couple of weeks, he sends out an email with forecasts for dozens of economic indicators other than the stock market.
To me, industrial production and unemployment are the most important gauges.
But he says when the economy does bottom out, we're likely to hear about it from Wall Street first.
People start to get new orders. Businessmen start to become more optimistic. The analysts that drill down and do company analysis pick up on that, and it starts to be reflected in stock prices.
Of course, Wall Street investors are famous for buying on the rumor and selling on the news, and rumors are occasionally wrong. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
If you're game for some more market-based forecasting, go ahead and check Asian stocks before you go to bed tonight. See if you can figure out how Wall Street might react to the economic speech the president's going to make to Congress tonight. Here is today's Man Bites Dog story. American Express is going to pay its customers. Amex is offering $300 to some of its cardholders to cancel their accounts. No altruism here. It's high credit card delinquencies instead. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Credit card companies make money when we carry a balance. That's the business model. Usually, they give you incentives to become a card member. Now comes American Express with an offer to pay customers $300 to close their accounts.
You know, it's kind of crazy.
That's Curtis Arnold with CardRatings.com. He says kind of crazy because in many ways the deal makes sense. American Express announced last week that delinquencies rose more than expected in January, and the company says it needs to cut more than $1.5 billion in expenses. Arnold says Amex is either getting creative or desperate.
They're not doing this necessarily out of the kindness of their hearts. They're doing it as a way to hedge risk.
American Express wouldn't say how many customers got the offer, only that some had stopped making payments on big balances and had little new account activity. Other credit card companies are expected to follow Amex's lead, and for good reason. The average rate of uncollectible credit card accounts has jumped from 2 to 8%. Unemployment is still ticking up, and for many, economic recovery is just the name of a bill out of Washington. Analyst Greg McBride at Bankrate.com says in this environment, credit card companies need to play defense.
And the ways that they do that, cut back credit lines, close out cards that haven't been used to this point.
And if you're American Express, pay people to go away. Selected customers have until the end of the month to accept the offer. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Do you remember that line from The Wizard of Oz?
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
The Wall Street variation today might well be pay close attention to the Fed chairman. On Capitol Hill, Ben Bernanke said today exactly what the major indices wanted to hear. We will have the details when we do the numbers. With Wall Street down to somewhere near half of where it was 18 months ago, there is an understandable temptation to try to figure out why. Inevitably, that is a complicated question, and the answer is pretty complicated, too. The cover story in this month's Wired magazine suggests one possibility. A guy named David Lee and a formula he came up with to help Wall Street figure out how risky one set of bonds might be as compared with another and what happens when those bonds default. Felix Salmon wrote that article. He also sometimes helps us wrap up the week on Friday afternoons as well. Hi, Felix. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Kay.
This guy, David Lee, what was he trying to do?
What David Lee was trying to do was look at lots of different bonds and try and work out whether they were all moving in the same direction or not, whether they were correlated or not, whether they were independent of each other or not. And he created this astonishing piece of mathematics called the Gaussian copula function, which sought to answer that very question.
What does that mean, Gaussian copula? I mean, if I can just take a little sidebar here for a sec.
The people get very scared when they hear the word Gaussian, but this is just one way of looking to see whether one set of probabilities is associated with another set of probabilities. The really key part of the Gaussian copula function is the copula bit. It's what's known as a multivariate copula. You can take lots of different bonds or stocks or any kind of securities you like, and you can throw them all into one big equation and out the end just get a single number, which is easily manipulable and tractable, as they say in the world of quantitative finance.
It comes across in the article that this formula is a little bit like the grand unified field theory of financial economics, that once this guy figures out correlation between when bonds default and when they don't, well, then Wall Street says, holy cow, we found it. We just have to look at this one simple thing, and now we can trade a million different securities.
Exactly. You can throw this formula at so many different problems and get this very elegant, simple number out the other end. And it made it far too easy for people to be able to just say, hey, we've solved this problem and let's go away and start trading lots of money. And eventually what happens is that in their desire for things to trade, they wind up buying huge amounts of debt, which they really shouldn't have been buying.
And they were buying it because this formula said, well, this correlates to that and everything should be fine.
The slogan has it that in a crisis, all correlations go to one. It's something which no one really thought about during the good years.
That is to say, all those correlations going to one means everything moves together. And even bad things can move together.
Especially bad things move together. So if you have one mortgage defaulting, then suddenly you have 100 mortgages defaulting. And even though you could cope quite happily with one or two mortgages defaulting, what you can't cope with is mortgages across the state and across the country all defaulting at the same time.
All right, but let me ask you this then, Felix. Here's this guy. He's a statistics PhD. He comes up with this formula. He thinks it works. Turns out, in reality, it has a fatal flaw. But is the fault his, or is the fault with the application that Wall Street did with it?
The fault is really with Wall Street. The way you get bubbles on Wall Street is when everyone does the same thing at the same time. If no one used the formula, then it would have had no damage. If only a few people used it, then they would have lost money, but the whole system would have been okay. The problem was that the whole system started using the formula.
Obviously, it's not David Lee's fault that Wall Street took his formula and did all this crazy stuff with it. But do you get a sense at all that he wishes maybe he hadn't come up with it?
I think he's built a really rather successful career over this on the back of this formula. And given that most people who know about it don't blame him personally for the meltdown of the global financial system, I think he's probably done all right for himself.
Felix Salmon blogs at Portfolio.com. He's writing on paper this month, the cover story in Wired magazine about the Gaussian copula formula. Felix, thanks a lot.
A pleasure.
If you want to see for yourself what David Lee's Gaussian copula function looks like, we've got it on our website, complete with a link to Felix's Wired story as well. Our homepage, marketplace.org. Economically speaking, this isn't really a time for parties, but today is Mardi Gras, which means down in New Orleans, the good times are going to roll, recession or not. And the economy there has more to revel in than just an influx of tourism dollars. Kate Archer Ken from Red River Radio got the pulse from beyond Bourbon Street.
Nothing says New Orleans like glittery parade floats and throngs of tipsy tourists. City officials estimate that Mardi Gras makes New Orleans more than $1 billion each year. Janet Spire is an economist at the University of New Orleans. She says her city has good reason to celebrate. While the recession eats away at other cities, the Big Easy's economy is doing, dare we say it, pretty well.
For the first time, the United States is looking at us and wanting to know, was it worth saving New Orleans? And as a resident and someone who works and watches the numbers, it's obvious that New Orleans is making a comeback.
New Orleans was maimed by Hurricane Katrina, but today Spire says the city's unemployment rate is a healthy 2 points below the national average. Over the last year, she says, people have found work in a growing tourism industry and in a massive construction boom.
Roads were being repaired, bridges were being repaired, flood control projects, and the levees were being worked on.
That kind of reconstruction work has buffered New Orleans from the wider recession. Cynthia Sylvain Lear is Deputy Chief Administrative Officer for the city. She says more than 300 municipal buildings need repair. There's plenty of work to go around, she says, but there aren't enough architects in New Orleans to get it done.
We've had architects that are just so overloaded that we've expanded our scope beyond our area and region, and we anticipate we will have the same problem with construction.
Most of the money funding New Orleans' building boom comes from the government. Home builder Fernando Ariola started 6 new jobs this week, but he knows that federal cash won't last forever, so he treats every job as if it were his last.
We have to be extremely careful and diligent as to how we are spending our money now, because one bad decision can bring you down.
Ariola looks beyond the city limits, and he sees the country falling into recession. He knows that when the public money runs out, his work will dry up unless the banks step in and start lending to builders and buyers. The people developing New Orleans commercial spaces are in a similar bind. Kurt Weigel heads up New Orleans' downtown development district. He says more than $500 million in construction is underway in the one-square-mile downtown. But banks' reluctance to lend is holding back a lot of the development the city needs.
We've got to try to put together some very creative financing just to make standard, high-quality real estate projects move forward downtown. I think as soon as we start to see any loosening of credit at the national level, I think New Orleans, and particularly downtown New Orleans, are going to be off to the races.
Until that happens, things will likely move slowly in New Orleans. 87% of the city's residents have returned since Hurricane Katrina hit, and more are moving back at the same rate jobs are being created. Economists say that makes for an unusually stable job market. And in these tough times, that's a good reason to take to the streets and celebrate. In New Orleans, I'm Kate Archer-Kent for Marketplace.
Coming up, new ways to fill up those empty storefronts.
I do think it does have an effect on people. If there's a vacancy in retail, you see it.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials picked up 3.3% today, 236 points, closed at 73.50. The Nasdaq piled on just over under 4%, 54 points, 14.41 the number. The S&P 500 added 4%, 29 points, finished the day at 773. Financial shares soared. Citigroup moved skyward for a second day. It deposited a 21.5% gain. Bank of America pushed up 21%. Wells Fargo gained 18.3% today. Retail stocks finally found some buyers. Macy's charged up 12% after its quarterly earnings beat expectations. Nordstrom added close to 21% after it said it's going to be profitable this year. Liz Claiborne locked in a 24% increase. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.79%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals at Vanguard.com. Sustainability reporting is supported by Johnson Controls, making homes, cars, and workplaces more comfortable, safe, and sustainable. Johnson Controls, where ingenuity is welcome. Now you can take Marketplace with you wherever you go. Tap in marketplace.org into your mobile phone for the latest business news, decoders that explain financial terms, and updates on the economic crisis.
On the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. The National Association of Realtors releases its monthly report on sales of existing homes. The Senate Special Committee on Aging holds a hearing on securing retirement in a volatile economy. And a House committee discusses the 21st century workforce. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
Stories about the housing crisis always seem to get big debates going on our website. And our interview with New York Times ethicist Randy Cohen was no different at all. Talking about President Obama's plan for the real estate market, Cohen said mortgage holders deserve a helping hand from the government, and that irresponsible bankers ought to get the blame for the moral lapse here. John Mullins from Riverdale, Maryland, wrote to say, no way.
If someone made a bad decision because they lacked financial sophistication, or if they fell on genuinely hard times, forgiveness is all well and good. On the other hand, if they simply decided that inadequate income should not be an impediment to owning a house with a two-story foyer and a spa bathroom, then they are just as morally wrong as the banker is.
Yesterday, commentator Ben Barber took a stab at a different kind of bailout idea. He suggested the government ought to give banks vouchers as a way to guarantee lending. Like a lot of you, Kurt Fredrickson from Renton, Washington, thinks that's a great idea.
Usually I'm wordy and analytical, but in this case, cool. What's not to love? When can it start?
Talk of banks often leads to talk of money, lots and lots of money, trillions of dollars. Commentator K.C. Cole took on the task of quantifying that humongous number, and that sparked more computations from listener Henry Cook of Columbia, South Carolina.
to wait for 1 trillion seconds to pass, you'll need to get very comfortable. It's going to take 31,709 years, 289 days, 1 hour, 46 minutes, 47 seconds. That's a bit more than 317 centuries.
From centuries to seconds now, we spoke to our gadget guy Kevin Pereira last week. He brought in a camera that can snap a photo and upload it to the web in just a few seconds flat. A very private Gary Book from Port Washington, New York, was amazed and a little scared.
Within seconds, any event now can be placed on the web for all to see. So much for privacy. J.D. Salinger and Thomas Pynchon would have been ruined, as would St. Paul the Hermit.
Finally, a note on our story a couple of weeks ago about the lack of cash in the Palestinian territories and how that's holding up reconstruction there after recent Israeli airstrikes. I set up the piece by saying lives were lost on both sides. That is what you call a false equivalence. Some context would have helped there. International health groups say about 1,300 Gazans and 13 Israelis died over the course of the current fighting. If you hear something else that gives you pause or makes you want to praise, you know where to go. Our website is marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. There are all kinds of ways to set yourself up in business, if that's what you've got in mind to do. You can go the classic entrepreneur route and come up with an idea or a better mousetrap all by yourself. Or you can go to the other extreme and buy your way in with a franchise. You get a ready-made brand image and a marketing model to help drive traffic to your door. But this recession is turning out to be distinctly franchise-unfriendly. Franchisees are defaulting on loans backed by the Small Business Administration in increasing numbers. From the Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Analyst Bob Coleman tracks SBA lending in his trade journal, The Coleman Report. His take on the default stats that he just released?
It's brutal. The numbers are ugly.
Defaults rose more than 50% last year on SBA-guaranteed loans to franchisees. Roughly 1 in 10 closed their doors. The failure rate is worst among franchises selling subs, ice cream, pizza, and auto maintenance, with brands like Quiznos, Cold Stone Creamery, Subway, and Amco high on the list. Les Foreman owns a successful shipping franchise called Packmail in Tampa, Florida. He thinks any franchise that relies on discretionary spending by consumers is in for trouble in this economy.
You can put off repairs on your vehicle. You don't have to go out to eat. You do have to send things places.
Franchise owner Chris Schmitz knows some of his peers are struggling. Schmitz has 3 Meineke auto repair shops in Northern Virginia and is president of the Meineke Dealers Association.
I think a lot of people felt if they built it, they will come, and they took on debt loads with the property that the business model couldn't sustain.
Overpriced real estate isn't the only problem for franchise owners. Analyst Bob Coleman says some also bought their franchises at inflated prices using SBA-backed loans. Now that the bubble has burst, he predicts banks will be hesitant to make new loans, and all franchise owners who need additional financing will likely pay the price. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
3 big-box retailers reported quarterly earnings today. There were losses of varying size at Target, Office Depot, and Home Depot. And let's not forget Circuit City, either. The bankrupt electronics chain is in the process of closing down more than 500 of its stores nationwide. All those troubles in retail are leaving property owners with a lot of vacant big boxes to fill. And Tamara Keith reports that could lead to some creative reuses.
About a year ago, the CompUSA store in Gaithersburg, Maryland, shut its doors for good. That was bad news for Gene Carlin at Danek Corporation. That's the real estate development company that owns the vacant 30,000-square-foot building.
We were concerned. We went through several prospective new tenants, Office Depots, Staples, people like that, Gold's Gym, that were trying to look at that to see if they'd take over the lease. But none of them came to fruition.
But this isn't a tale of vacant retail blight.
That dog has been barking all morning.
Dr. Eric Boshoven is a radiation oncologist at VCA Veterinary Referral Associates. The vet hospital provides specialty care, neurology, surgery, and oncology, and it's bursting at the seams.
We absolutely are running into people constantly in this facility. We're on top of each other all the time.
Dr. Boshoven was shopping at the going out of business sale at the nearby CompUSA when one of those Eureka lights went off in his head.
I saw that they were going out of business, and so I started asking the manager,
what are you doing with this building when you're done? And they didn't know, but they put me on to the real estate company that was in charge of the building.
Work is now underway to convert the old CompUSA into a high-end veterinary specialty hospital. VCA is scheduled to move in this June. Property manager Gene Carlin didn't know much about the veterinary business when this all got started, but he sure does now, and he's thrilled to have a long-term lease. And with the current economy, he figures his firm won't be the only one thinking outside of the retail box.
You're going to see people have different uses that come into box stores that normally you wouldn't consider 2 years ago. 2 years ago, there would have been somebody to backfill CompUSA right away, and there probably would have been competition to get the store.
In 2008, there were 176 million square feet of vacant space in strip centers, and it's getting worse. According to projections from commercial real estate firm Cushman & Wakefield and industry observer Reis Inc., that figure will jump by 20% by the end of this year, leaving more than 7.5 square miles of vacant storefronts nationwide. Mike Williams teaches real estate at Portland State University. He says it's not just the owners of these strip malls that are hurting. Neighborhoods are suffering, too.
I do think it does have an effect on people. If there's a vacancy in retail, you see it.
There's nothing like a big, empty store to remind shoppers that there's a recession. But Williams says a vet hospital might not be the best substitute for destination retailers like Circuit City or Linens and Things.
If you're in a larger center with other anchors, you're going to be more worried about the overall mix of the center. And you'd want to make sure, is this a complementary use to the other uses? Is this a complementary tenant?
If the recession drags on, though, Williams says property owners will become increasingly receptive to creative reuse. Things like churches, call centers, and even animal hospitals. I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering absolute return funds with goals designed to match yours. Details at Putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note today on banks and the nationalization thereof. As I mentioned in passing earlier, Ben Bernanke was up on Capitol Hill today. There were, as is usual, hours of questions and answers. Just two big takeaways, though, really. The Fed chairman said that he's not much interested in nationalizing banks at the moment, anyway. That's what gave Wall Street its kick in the pants today. And in the For What It's Worth department, he did say he thinks there is a reasonable chance the recession will end sometime this year. And for this day, that is us. That's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 236 points, 3.33%. The Nasdaq added 54 points, 4%. The S&P 500 gained 29 points, again, 4%. Thanks to Jennifer Collins, Renita Jablonski, and Doug Krisner on our morning report crew. Coming up next time on this program, jumpstarting renewable energy.
We've got thousands of installers ready to go and warehouses filled with equipment. What we were lacking was the financing to get these projects off the shelf and moving forward. We now have that through the stimulus bill.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.